from NPR News. This is All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz. Turkeys are the centerpiece of most Thanksgiving meals, of course, but there is a farm in upstate New York where turkeys are the guests at the meal. Reporter Emma Jacobs visited the 26th annual Feeding of the Turkeys ceremony.
A line of turkeys come walking out the door of the barn. They stroll curiously towards long, low tables set up on the lawn, with scarlet tablecloths and seasonal squash centerpieces, and a feast, pumpkin pie topped with cranberries, and platters of green salad hold the dressing. The spread is surrounded by a crowd of spectators.
Hi, sweetheart. Mommy's here.
Jamie Cohen's been sponsoring a turkey at the farm for years, but it died of natural causes last winter. So she's picked out a new brown bird.
Hey, Velma. Vel. I'm talking to her like she knows her name. Velma.
Cohen makes the five-hour drive from Baltimore every year for the feast.
And I wanted to pick out a new turkey, and she's as sweet as she can be, and loves to be petted, loves to be kissed and held, and I picked her, and I knew she'd be easy to spot like she was today.
As you might have guessed, Jamie doesn't serve up turkey at her Thanksgiving meal.
We don't want to eat them. They're no different than dogs and cats. They feel pleasure and pain.
She's very shy. That's Snowberry, so somebody can go feed her.
Susie Costin runs the farm sanctuary in Watkins Glen, New York, which hosts the turkey's dinner. She says Farm Sanctuary wants to show people how to honor the birds that are normally Thanksgiving dinner.
You're going to go get the pies and take them off the table and feed everybody.
So one of the things we try to do is let people really meet them. And so, like, they all have names, and they all have personalities, and they all have friendships, and we want people to see them for who they are.
AIDS is a food. This one will not eat berries.
Most of the turkeys chow down on their dishes, but there's one human VIP at the meal, Seth Tibbett, who created the tofurkey. That's exactly what it sounds like, an alternative turkey made out of tofu. Tofurkeys will be on about 350,000 tables this holiday season. At the end of the meal, Tibbett's sitting on the grass, petting a very stuffed turkey named Elizabeth.
That's how I am, by the way, after Thanksgiving dinner, too. Get about two steps from my chair and down on the floor.
It's Tibbett's very first time here for the annual Feeding of the Turkeys. He says it's awesome, transformative.
You don't really have face time with turkeys in my line of work. You know, you think you would, but you don't.
Tibbett says if he had any on him, he would give the birds a bit of tofurkey, but he's not sure they would eat it. For NPR News, I'm Emma Jacobs.
Thanksgiving means feasts and football, and these days it means feasts of football. The NFL now plays three games on Thanksgiving Day, and here with a preview is NPR's sports correspondent, Mike Pesca. Mike, Dallas and Detroit always play on Thanksgiving, but they don't play each other. This year, for the first time in a very long time, it is the Detroit Lions who have the better record. How'd that happen?
Well, Detroit, as we know, 3 years ago, they were a winless team, but they did what they had to do in terms of rebuilding through the draft and acquiring talent. Now they're very good on defense. But an interesting thing has happened with Detroit. You would think that a team that was so bad so recently and from a town that really could use a boost would be the darlings of casual NFL fans. But they've actually established themselves as something of the wearers of black hats. They get accused of being cheap. They slam other quarterbacks to the ground. So that's okay. The Lions are saying to themselves, fine, hate us, but fear us. We're now a good team. Here's the problem for them today. They play the Packers, by far the best team in the NFL. You'd have to certainly give the Packers the edge, but the Lions come into this game better than they have been in a decade.
Now, in the next game today, the Cowboys host the Dolphins. And what makes this special is the memory of their 1993 Thanksgiving Day showdown. The Dolphins were kicking a field goal to win in the very last seconds of the game, and it was snowing.
Doug Peterson to hold. Block! The Cowboys will win!
Wait a minute indeed, because at that very moment, the announcers and everyone in the stadium realized the huge gaffe that had taken place. Leon Lett, who the season before had established himself as committing one of the greatest blunders in NFL history, allowing himself to get stripped in a meaningless play in the Super Bowl because he was showboating near the end zone, went up to the ball. It was unclear whether he wanted to touch it or just slipped in the snow. Anyway, he touched a ball that, if left alone, would have meant the game was over and the Cowboys had won. But he touched the ball, putting it back into play. play that allowed the Dolphins another chance to make that kick and win. Here is my bold prediction. This week, we will not see a replay of that. Not only is Leon Lett retired, the new Dallas Stadium is indoors, so there won't be any snow on the field.
And we've got to talk about the Harbaugh Bowl. John Harbaugh, head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, takes on his brother, Jim Harbaugh, who's coach of the San Francisco 49ers. Which of the Harbaugh boys is harder to beat?
Yeah, it's hard out there for a Harbaugh. Actually, it's not. I mean, both of these guys have had big success in the NFL. What Jim has done with the 49ers is really remarkable because people didn't think this was a good team. Jim came over from Stanford where he rehabilitated that program, and people said, well, he was so successful at Stanford because he had one of the great college quarterbacks of the last couple decades. But, you know, in San Francisco, he has a quarterback who people have written off as a bust. But Jim Harbaugh has gotten everything he can out of Alex Smith. He's a very smart coach and a very good inspirer of men. The 49ers.
He was also quite an exciting quarterback himself.
That's right. He was a quarterback for the Bears and before that a little bit for the Colts. And his dad was a coach and his brother is a coach and his sister is married to the coach of Indiana. There's so much coaching and quarterbacking in that Harbaugh family. And if you've noticed, we've talked about a lot of good teams playing today. So except for those Miami Dolphins, five of the six teams today are really excellent, which could mean we'll have a bunch of good games today.
Thanks very much, Mike.
You got it.
That's NPR's Mike Pesca.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz. With all the economic uncertainty in the world, one thing is more valuable than ever. The price of gold has doubled in the last couple of years, and that's been great for northern Nevada. There are gold mines there, and mine towns are booming. Tons of money, low unemployment. So why are people in northern Nevada anxious about the future? Robert Smith and Zoe Chase from our Planet Money team went to Elko, Nevada to find out.
Elko is a city surrounded by gold mines, but you never actually see any of the gold.
Oh, it's everywhere up here in the hills. It's just microscopic, trapped in little flecks in the rocks under our feet.
So there was no old guy with a pickaxe who came through here and...
They walked right over this deposit.
Because there was nothing to see.
Right, right.
But you can tell the gold is here by the giddiness in Elko. You can see it in Guy Simpson, a mine manager with more jobs than he can fill.
We want to expand. We need people.
You can feel it from Phil Christiansen, who's in town to sell chemicals to the mines.
This place, honestly, it's like a beehive. It's lit up. I mean, I was lucky to get a hotel room here tonight.
You can even hear the gold if you follow the miners when they go off shift to spend their money at the karaoke bar.
If you want to look for a party in a bar, you can find it here 7 nights a week.
That's Cody Spring, 22 years old, a baby-faced miner who makes $70,000 a year. And he wants everyone to know it.
Any single girls in New York, if you want a young Nevada guy with lots of money, my number is 702-379-2210.
Yeah, and if you want an engineer, my number is 435.
No. Whoa.
No.
That guy who grabbed the microphone is not an engineer.
Apparently, that's something that dudes in Elko say just to get chicks.
They brag about their jobs because the mine is in the money.
And the money's in the mines.
Okay, we gotta go see what's driving this boom town. We head on up to the mine, Barrick Gold Strike, or as I like to call it, the biggest damn hole in the ground you've ever seen.
It's like the Grand Canyon. If the Grand Canyon were black and dusty and filled with explosives.
This mine has been here a long time, but it's never been this busy. There are so many trucks working down there right now. The hole is now so deep, 1,200 feet, all because of the price of gold. Ask anyone, like manager Steve Kesha.
Do you know what the gold price is today?
I follow it fairly closely. It's just over $1,700 an ounce, somewhere around $1,730, I think, today.
The reason he has to know this price is because this gold here is really hard to get at. This gold has to be crushed and baked and squeezed out of the rocks.
You have to put a lot of work in to get a little bit out. And it's only worth it if the world really wants it, if the price of gold is above the magic number.
One of the mine managers, Al Plank, has a term for this.
Economic gold. That's what we're looking for.
What does that mean, economic gold?
That means that it has to have enough gold per ton of ore so that we can recover our costs.
Is this a simple equation? Because you know how much it costs to get the gold out. You just pull up on the internet what the gold price is and boom, that's it?
No, I'd say it's very complicated.
Because if the price of gold drops too much, or if the costs of getting it out of the ground go too high, then this whole operation grinds to a halt.
And drags Elko down with it. We walked into town expecting to tell a story about how good the good times feel, but there was a definite anxiety here.
For instance, we were coming back from the mine, and we saw an apartment complex being built. Housing is so tight in Elko right now that people are moving in while the apartment complex is still under construction. Lacey Foster is 20 years old, pregnant with her second kid. She's from another Nevada town, Winnemucca, but her husband got a job here at the mines.
So we've been living in motels for the past 7 months. And
which motels?
The cheap ones that are gross, and you know, but it's so expensive to find a decent place.
Lacey just got the newest apartment in town. Her troubles should be over. But she really sounds like she's hedging her bet.
For now, for the next 6 months, we're just going to live here, and then hopefully we're going to be able to buy a place somewhere else in case, you know, the mining goes down. Because that scares me, you know, that if the mining stops or if the gold runs out or... Because, I mean, what are we going to do?
Why aren't you optimistic? Have you seen this go bad other places? You're only 20.
Winnemucca. It was a big gold mine town, and people just up and left their stuff. But that's how it always happens, is it gets big. The gold boom gets big, and then out of nowhere it just stops.
This has crushed Nevada communities before. Heck, there are ghost towns all around here that thought the gold would last forever. So how does Elko avoid the same fate? We went to visit the man in charge.
Chris Johnson, mayor, city of Elko.
Why'd you want to be mayor?
I don't know.
He's really a plumber. Mayoring is a part-time gig, and it explains a lot about him.
Yeah, he was running his own plumbing business during the last recession, and he told us a story. When the dot-com bubble burst 10 years ago, Johnson didn't worry about his plumbing company. He thought, hey, Elko has gold.
Elko is immune to a recession. I just figured that, you know, hey, I got this figured out. It's a simple formula. Economy goes down, gold price goes up, Elko pushes through it, Elko does okay in between. We don't have an issue. So in this business, it was, you know, go, 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 hire, 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 buy trucks, borrow money, so on and so forth. Well, guess what?
The price of gold didn't shoot up. In fact, it bottomed out.
And in a matter of a month, we went from a company of 50-plus people to a company of about 10 people. It was a big eye-opener in being careful of what it is.
So he's trying to run the town like it could crash at any time, using cash, not much borrowing.
And he's not the only one being careful. Mayor Johnson says that he can't get private developers to build new housing tracts in Elko. Because face it, what bank wants to lend money to build houses in Nevada, the capital of the housing bust, even if they do have gold?
And in some ways, maybe it's nice to have a little sanity during a boom, right? Rather than overbuild, overpromise, you're careful. You enjoy having the best economy in the state, but you understand it can't last forever.
And in fact, we met a couple of young people who are playing this whole boom-bust cycle perfectly. This is what ambition sounds like. High heel shoes on the floor of the auto shop at Elko High School.
We asked to meet some students who are going into gold mining, and this is what we got.
Kaylee?
I'm wearing my suede booties. They're my favorite, high heels.
And this is Bread.
I have my brand new cowgirl belt. Oh, and my blue feather earrings.
They're so cute.
They are as precious as they sound. They look like Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
And they're also the best Cracker Jack diesel mechanics in their vocational class.
And these girls have a plan. Every day out the windows of the high school, they see trucks heading up to the gold mines. All day and all night. And the girls thought, hey, after we graduate, why not open a truck repair shop?
I gotta ask, have you come up with a name yet?
We like the Cinderella Girls, because our friend taught us the meaning, and it's like the Cinderella Girls, it's coming from nothing and turning into something. So we started out knowing nothing about cars, and then we actually turned out, and we know a lot about it now, and it's like we've blossomed.
You know, one of the things that's so weirdly moving about your plan is that you do know that in most of America, people think that there's a really sad future out there for the economy.
In Elko, we've been really blessed and really lucky to actually have a good economy here. So we can actually have our hopes and dreams and actually work towards them. You don't want to have your hopes too low, because then you're not actually going to have a future planned out for you.
It's not just money that builds up during the boom times. It's momentum.
And momentum can carry you through whatever comes next. I'm Robert Smith.
I'm Zoe Chase, NPR News.
Support for Planet Money comes from Ally Bank, offering Pop Money, a way to pay other people online by sending an email or a text. Learn more at allybank.com.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
And now let's go from Planet Money to Planet Food, to New York State, where this time of year a candy maker is making a confection known as turkey joints. They are bone-shaped candies. And every year as Christmas approaches, Rachel Ward of member station WXXI receives a jar of them.
I usually get the turkey joints for St. Nicholas Day, but I often then will save another jar for Little Christmas.
This is my mother-in-law, Miriam Gans. She claims leaving gifts in your shoes is a bona fide European tradition for the 6th of December. But the turkey joints are a uniquely upstate New York twist. She was first introduced to them when vacationing with friends from Rome, about 3 hours east of where we live in Rochester.
So through the years, we had this celebration where we had the exchange of the regional culinary treat.
The families would apparently sit around the campfire and swap weird local foods.
I guess it's a signature candy for Rome. And so when we invented this nonsensical game, they just knew that turkey joints would be the thing to bring.
That's because turkey joints are so utterly strange. They're about half a foot long with a silvery sheen. They get their name from the knobby little joints that run up and down their length. Those are the Brazil nuts embedded in the bone's chocolate marrow, according to the website for Nora's Candy Shop, the company that makes them.
They're really good. The outside, it's sweet. It almost tastes like cotton candy or something, and like really has a sugary flavor.
When my friend Brittany Salisbury came to visit me in Rochester, I told her that I wanted to introduce her to a poultry-themed candy. So I took her to Stever's Candies, the only place I know of that sells the joints locally.
They're good enough that I can overlook the fact that they look like bones.
They're a very unique piece of candy. I don't know anybody else making such a thing with the chocolate and the nuts inside the candy.
Kevin Stever runs this shop, where he sells turkey joints shipped in from Nora's. He says this handmade candy is extremely vulnerable to humidity, so it has to be packaged in glass, bumping up the price to almost 20 bucks a jar. I told my mother-in-law I thought that was a lot for a novelty item, and she sort of got offended.
So when you get the turkey joints in your shoe on St. Nicholas Day, is it a joke?
No. Turkey joints are very serious. There's nothing humorous about them. It's a true gesture of affection.
A gesture that I expect to find in my shoe in about a week or so. For NPR News, I'm Rachel Ward in Rochester, New York.
Just a reminder, we asked for your unique holiday dishes a few weeks ago, and now many of those recipes and photos are available for you at npr.org.